I would like to welcome Michael Dow to Michigan Writers on the Air. Welcome, Michael.
Good morning.
Today we're going to be talking about your new book, Dark Matters, which is the first book in a trilogy. Dark Matters is set in the future, but not the too distant future. Early writers of sci-fi, people like Jules Verne, had the luxury of looking out 100 years, 200, 300 years, and there was great safety in that, at least for the readers. The world you're talking about isn't that distant from us, is it?
It's a couple generations, and I'm no Jules Verne. Maybe it's the best way to put it. Looking out that far into the future, that kind of visionary thinking it was easier for whatever reason for me to think about. And my background is a lot in technology and business, and so I found it easier to think about what's the business world, what's technology, what, and when you look at this whole topic of income inequality and where we're headed in the world with the population and dwindling resources and climate change and these other topics, I found looking at 50 years, 60 years out in the future to be something I could deal with as a writer and talk to in ways that you know resonated with me, but also I felt you know could be something that would be thought provoking for a reader to say, you know what, I call it a work of mostly fiction because I'd like people to take these topics on in a way that is both entertaining and thought provoking.
So did you start with themes? I mean, global warming is there, rapid technological changes in the book, globalization is there.
It's a great question. The truth is, the book started as a story about dark matter. I've been a closet physicist and in love with, you know, why are we here in the universe and this whole question and Fritz Zwicky in the 1930s figuring out that, you know, what we see is 5% of the universe. There's this stuff that here we are nearly 100 years later, we still don't know what it is. And I just find that fascinating. And so those questions and kind of the cosmology of what is dark matter. So I've had this story in my head for over a decade in between, you know, boring meetings and conference rooms and boardrooms playing around in my head. When I finally left the business world and decided to write a book, I just, well, where am I going to set this story? You need a, you know, I know the what, but I need a when and a where. And so I started thinking about and doing the research, and it turned out that it really fit well as I looked at understanding dark matter a little better, that this would be in this not too distant future. It tied well to kind of everything else that's going on in the world, and frankly, a nice hook for the book to say, hey, this is the world where the billionaires have become trillionaires, and the wealth gap, this, you know, where we're potentially headed if we don't do something about the way the world is playing out. And that, you know, people like Congress says, now you're talking real money when you talk trillionaires. So, and what you can do with that kind of money, and with to me, it's more about the gap in wealth than it is about, you know, trillionaires are free to be trillionaires in my mind, at least. And I wanted people to think about those implications and kind of, so that's how I got to that side of the story, was a bit of a stumbling to it from really the foundation being what happens if someone discovers what dark matter is, and it's kind of an incredibly amazing thing.
Michael, in the book, there are three major narrative threads. Rudy Dirsch, a CEO of a major computer consortium. Monique, who is a D.C.-based art gallery owner, very spiritual. She has prescient knowledge. And Professor Jonas Hansen, a Hawaii-based physicist. Interesting way that you interweave these three stories, and they're such different characters. Could you talk about that?
They are, and thank you. I think they tie back to these different storylines, of course, and both kind of the wealth aspect, the science aspect, and then, as you said, the spirituality aspect. And for me, with the story starting from the concept of dark matter and the universe and where we're from, I've always seen science and religion as kind of two sides of the same coin. And so I see Jonas and Monique, to a certain extent, coming at a similar problem from two different perspectives. And you know, as you can imagine, they don't necessarily see eye to eye and have different perspectives on that. So the way that allowed, you know, three different types of characters, three different personalities, three different views of the current world, and you know, one very wealthy CEO who's asked to join this secret cabal of you know, the trillionaires who are behind the scenes running things, and how he struggles with, but it, you know, he's a real person, and he's someone who struggles tying family and back to his day-to-day work, and can't tell his wife about what he's been asked to now do and struggles with that. So
that you do that very skillfully by having children and
that's it. I know a little bit about children, not a lot, and certainly not very much about raising girls, as I came from a family of all boys. So that's been an interesting learning experience. But that helped in that storyline and working through and how does that tie together to Monique and her world, this more spiritual world, and she's having these visions and she's seeing. You know, she's an only child. She comes from a broken family, and you see as you read through the story, she's got a lot going on in terms of kind of finding her place in the world and what's the purpose behind her life. And then Jonas, more of the kind of the renegade physicist who's, you know, out by day having to work for a living and find asteroids for these wealthy companies. But by night, his secret passion is looking for dark matter, and he's trying to do that and still try to, you know, keep the company afloat and make a living. And that big discovery suddenly just changes everything. So I love the way that the three storylines, you know, begin independently, but begin to interweave and begin to interact. And certainly I can tell you, as you get into book two and book three, they are, you know, heavily tied together and become kind of that single storyline that moves forward.
And then you have other characters sort of lurking out there, mm-hmm. characters like the environment, technology. We don't think about them often as characters, but they play a kind of role in the story.
They really do, and I have to give my editor a little bit of credit for that. When he first read the book, he said that, you know, the worldview in this world of 50, 60 years from now really is, he called it the fourth main character, and said that that needs to really come through and be built up, and actually gave me, as one of the challenges, said, go find, you know, 40 or 50 more really cool things about the world of that you believe will be, you know, this mostly fiction story, and see how you can insert them into the story in as few words as possible. So I had a lot of fun doing that, both the research and then figuring out how to, you know, tell something about plot line, tell something about character development, tell something about this world we would be living in, you know, in 10 words or less. So that's where some of my favorite lines in the book, like Monique at one point says, you know, oh, that's an oxymoron, like Glacier National Park. So those kinds of things that really give you a lot about this future world were a big part of trying to lay out that future, you know, of 2075 or whatever, that helps the reader see, okay, and they can draw from that, you know, kind of the inferences that come from those kinds of statements.
You bring a rich background to your writing. Could you talk about your years in the corporate world and how that influenced this book, this effort?
Sure. I spent about close to 25 years, and mostly in Washington, D.C., although assigned as a consultant all over the world, everywhere from federal locations, mostly federal government work, but to include the Middle East and some time in Saudi Arabia. And really, in those years, from, you know, starting in the bowels of corporate America and eventually working to the boardrooms and about 10 years as a CEO, you see some amazing things. I mean, I have seen the absolute best that corporate America has to offer, and unfortunately, I've also seen a little bit of the worst. And so I think, for instance, having just read one of the characters, Monique, I don't have, like I said, I didn't grow up with sisters necessarily, so but I've had a great time working with some amazing women, and both with women and for women, and so I have a lot of admiration for what they're able to accomplish as leaders in a world, you know, until recently dominated by a lot of men. So that brought a lot to me in terms of my experience, and I've been fortunate to work with some amazing women. So that's a good chunk of where Monique came from in the book. And I think my own experience in seeing both the good that can come from corporate America and wealth and those types of things, and as well as the not so good, made me want to write, you know, that as kind of the backdrop to the story, and let people see, you know, money isn't bad. It's the things that happen with it and some of the things behind it, and let people decide for themselves, you know, let's take a look at what this world might be and see what we might be able to do, and what are the key tipping points between now and 50 or 60 years from now that we might be able to change or influence in terms of the path we're currently on.
You write about a troubling future. Why did you choose fiction as your vehicle?
That's a great question. I did a lot of public speaking. I did a lot of writing, and from business proposals to articles and things in the business world. And to me, I just found this topic both the topic of what dark matter might be and this future world of extreme income inequality and the, you know, climate change and technology and overpopulation. There are a lot of nonfiction books out there already on a lot of these topics. I've tried to read them. I'm a huge fan of Stephen Hawking and Brian Greene, and I tell you, you get 8 or 10 chapters into those books, and I've read A Brief History of Time 6 times, and I'm up to about, I don't know, chapter 14 before I'm completely lost. These guys are brilliant, and I thought, you know, how do you bring that, and particularly this topic of income inequality? I mean, Joseph Stiglitz and his, there are PhDs out there that have written tomes on this, and they're just, it's a difficult read. It is fascinating, but what if we brought this conversation in an entertaining way to folks to be able to say, you know what, I enjoyed reading that, it was fun, it was entertaining, but it also was thought-provoking and gave me some perspective on, oh, wow, I see that the rich are keeping most of the money today. Well, what does that really mean? What could that look like in 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 years? And what are the key inflection points between now and then that are going to make a difference in terms of how we end up there, how climate change really plays out in the shorter future, not so distant future? So those questions I thought would be attacked in fiction in a better way that people could both, you know, think about but also enjoy.
You raised funds for this project with a Kickstarter campaign. Would you explain to our listeners what a Kickstarter campaign is and how it works for an author?
So Kickstarter is an internet platform that's a funding mechanism. You put a project up on this website called Kickstarter, and there are others, GoFundMe, Indiegogo, that allow you to raise money for particular projects. And the public, whether it's your friends or complete strangers, decide whether they want to, you know, fund your, you describe what it is. So I said, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write Dark Matters, and I need some money for research and publication and to get the book out there. For me, I thought it'd be kind of fun. I thought it would be a way to judge whether people thought this was a good idea. You know, if the project raised $6, that might tell me something about whether there's any interest in doing this before I spend 2 or 3 years of my life and writing this book. And it turned out there was some interest, and I ended up with 5,000 plus, you know, followers on Facebook before I had even finished the book. And funding a Kickstarter project. And the thing I didn't realize it would do is create kind of a built-in readership or set of fans prior to even having the book out, and allowed me to get the book with that project, I sent the book to all the Kickstarter backers before the book was even released. So they had already read it and they were ready to do reviews and to talk about it. So I really got some great feedback and also a built-in set of kind of advanced readers before I had even released the book. And as a debut author, I didn't know any better. I didn't realize how valuable that would be at the time when I did the project. So that turned out to be a great added benefit.
You also decided to self-publish Dark Matters. Why did you select this route to publication?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it may be a bit much to say. You select. It's tough to get for a debut fiction author to get published with a big publishing house. I think partly just wanting to get the book out. I really wanted to release the book, you know, now in the election cycle in 2016, and I thought I had finished the book a year ago, and then I had this author or this editor come on board who helped me with the world building and a bit of the storyline, and that process took over 6 months, and I had no idea that editing would take that amount of time. So, boy, I thought I had a great story, and then I hired an editor. Oh, my goodness.
It gets pretty bloody, doesn't it?
It got real bloody real fast, and I thought Jaws was bloody, and then I went through that. So before I knew it, I was late last year. And you talk to the publishing houses, and I went to some conferences and talked to a few, and it's, you know, they have at least 12 to 24 month window. And I just, you know, I'm fortunate to have the ability to be able to do it. And I enjoyed kind of being the general contractor, hiring my own publicist, hiring a cover artist, hiring the editor, hiring, you know, those different pieces to put this together and get the book out there. And it was something I wanted, you know, a bucket list thing I wanted to do once, not just write the book, but also go through that publishing process. So it's been a lot of fun, and allowed me to get the book out right, you know, around Iowa caucuses and in the beginning of this whole conversation on income inequality in the election.
Well, now you have thousands of readers like me who are waiting for the next installment. Now, Michael, I finished this book last week. How long do I have to wait?
Right, how long are you going to have to wait? I get that. The comment I'm getting most often, which is a great comment to hear from folks, and the good news is I am 70,000 plus words into book two. I'm getting close. I'm into the final act of the story. So I hope the second one can come out before the election itself, before the end of the year. And I will. I know a lot of people say, boy, that ending just left me hanging. You know, what were you doing? But when's the next one coming out? So I like that kind of answer. And we'll hopefully have the next one by the end of this year, and then the final book in the trilogy next year.
So readers can find more about you and this book at your website, which is?
Darkmattersbook.com.
Michael Dow, author of Dark Matters, thank you so much for being here, and we are looking forward to the next book.
Thank you so much, Aaron. I appreciate you having me on.